Stand by for adventure. 3, 2, 1. In the exciting story of...
Bam, here we are again, season 2 of the Lower Bottom Podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in and welcome. I am your co-host, Mr. Willie Adams. And with me, I have my illustrious co-host,
Mr. Kadinga Smith. How you guys doing, folks? What's up, Will?
Hey, what's up, bro? How are you?
I'm doing pretty good, man, considering. You know, we got a brand new year. We just entered the holiday season. That was interesting for us all. And we back at it, bro. What can I say? Season 2.
you know how we do. Before we get into our proceedings for the day, I want to give a shout out to Anchor, Breaker, Google Podcasts, Radio Public, Pocket Cast, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts for hosting us on their platforms. We appreciate you providing us a space to do what we do. And want to give a shout out to all our listeners worldwide out here in the United States. We got listeners in Ireland, France, India, the UK, Canada. We worldwide, you know what I'm saying? From Frisco to Maine, all the way to Spain. We doing it on the Lower Bottom Podcast. And Kadinga, again, just an honor to be back in the saddles with you again. Again,
yes, sir.
Telling these important stories, documenting this really incredible, important time in history, in Black history. And really
in American history,
and world history, in the history of humanity. I mean, I think we've seen things unfold in 2021 that have just been incredible. And we're going to definitely take some time out during the show to break that down. So excited to really hear your perspective on 2021, Kadinga. Being a resident of, you know, Washington, D.C., our nation's capital, where, you know, so much is going on there. And we're going to break all that down.
Absolutely.
But before we get into that, Kadinga, we had some, it's always important that we don't do anything without honoring our ancestors and our elders. And we lost some great ones this year. And again, the list is long, and we could do a whole show just on that, but we're not going to do anything without honoring those who have transitioned, who were a huge impact on us. So why don't we jump into some folks that we'd like to honor. Who would you like to honor first, Kadinga?
Well, there's thousands of people I'd like to honor, but I definitely would be doing a disservice if I didn't mention the fact that, you know, we started our podcast in April of last year, I believe, during the crescendoing of the pandemic and the rising number of deaths. And so far in this country, up to date, has been, you know, 366,393. I might be off a couple of hundred deaths since then, you know, since January 2020. And only a few days ago, we had like the most deadliest death of 4,100 plus people who died in one singular day, which is just absurd. So even before I even get the chance to acknowledge our own deaths and on a personal level, I think this is something that's kind of going on in this country. And I think globally, there's been like a million deaths. So unfortunately, it's very real. I think there's been a lot of mixed opinions about this pandemic and how, you know, us as a nation, us as a region, us as human beings relate to this. You know, we have a lot of individuals that's on the front line, a lot of hospital workers and, you know, politicians and medical staff. So it's real. So it affects people in a lot of different ways. But just note a few deaths that were just indicative to, you know, what we're about and who were kind of dear to us. I mean, got to mention, you know, Kobe Bryant. Kobe Bryant is one. Kobe and his daughter, Gigi. And that was just, you know, heartbreaking for a lot of people.
Right.
We lost an honorable John Lewis. You know, he's just one of our heroes from a lot of different levels. And for his, you know, his work with humanity and human rights, you know, for 50 some odd years, you got to acknowledge that brother there. We were speaking about, you know, Chad Bozeman, you know, Chadwick, you know, excellent brother, you know, and how he passed and the method of how he, the disease that kind of took over his body and how quickly he deteriorated. So I just want to shed some light on Chad, and, you know, we miss you, brother. And of course, Daniel Dumille, MF Doom. I mean, that's our guy, man. Like, Will, like, I think in episode one, we were just talking about some of the inspirations of how we came to be brothers, for one. And our connection to each other had always been music, communication, fashion, and laughter. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And Doom was just one of the first guys, you know, I guess, you know, he did what KND came out in
1988.
Yeah. Actually, the album came out in 91, but the concept they probably recorded in 1988. So that whole project was from 1988 to 1993. Mm. And, you know, MF Doom was brothers from the UK. Mm. You know what I'm saying? He was born in 71, and, you know, he born in the UK, and he passed in the UK. Ironically, he passed on Halloween. And I was telling my brothers this story just a couple of days ago. How I was in California for Halloween, and I made it back to Washington, D.C., like, shortly after the election. So I touched down. I kind of didn't want to be in D.C. during the election. There's too much going on. The climate is really, really, really crazy. And, you know, politics and living here and having to see it and hear these different reactions, it's just, it seems a bit different. I didn't want to be in nowhere near D.C. during that time. So anyhow, I was talking to one of my nephews, and a song came on, and I couldn't think of Doom's name at the time. So I finally found his name, and I started playing his music for like 2.5 hours.
Hmm.
Just kind of channeling Doom, as I would like to describe it to my brothers and my cousins and whatnot. Hmm. And during Christmas, I found this MF Doom mixtape. So I shared this MF Doom mixtape with my family also. I got two nephews that were born on August 15th of 2020. And we just try to share them with culture, and, you know, I was like, hey, man, play this Christmas mixtape for my nephews, and let's see if they get some type of reaction. So that's just connects with MF Doom. And Bill Withers, we were talking about Bill Withers. What does Bill Withers mean to you? I know there's so many different people we can mention who passed in 2020. And just from the statement you said that, you know, we've been through so much this year, and in 2021, we're only, what, 10 days in? So, and I'm a huge baseball fan, and on this day, like, we just lost Tommy Lasorda. You know, he's a manager from Brooklyn, you know, won a World Series with the Dodgers, so it's just, the death is just doesn't end. But Bill Withers, you were saying that how he was, what, the voice of the country or something like that?
Yeah, Bill Withers, I think it's really important. Well, first of all, it's really important that we honor all of these folks. And
sure.
Just to reiterate the importance of, you know, MF Doom. Yeah, he really embodied with KMD at a time. I mean, honestly, approximately 30 years ago when the album came out.
Right. That's crazy.
He embodied everything that you mentioned that really sort of sparked my imagination and my personality, and made me and exemplified a sense of freedom. Again, with his fashion, with his wordplay and creativity, with how he would, you know,
sample,
and how he would use wit, and, you know, and also it was spiritual. He was always weaving in, you know, his spirituality and all of that.
Correct.
And so, again, just the way that they looked, you know, with that whole look, with the, you know, with the French jeans, like, we hadn't really seen nothing like that, and the baggy hoodies, and, like, he was really the, like,
colorful parkas,
rugbies, you dig, you know what I mean, like, really taking it up to another level in terms of that, and really taking what, you know, white folks was saying was there, and just, like, really, like, nuh-uh. We taking all of this. You know what I mean? So,
even consider this, Will, and I don't mean to cut you off.
No,
even consider this, the ability to put all these different concepts together, and now we call it mixed media, when, you know, the digital age didn't really boom as much. So to take, like, to record something off of a television, like a commercial, because he would, like, sample commercials, and then he would, like, add the jazz element to it, and then bring the wordplay. So it was a whole presentation. Like, it was like a PowerPoint presentation, right? But it's all on an audible form, but you can see the colors, you can see the sounds, you can hear this, you know what I mean? You can see the entire stage. So to be able to produce that at the time that he did, you know, before the likes of Wu-Tang, before the likes of a lot of folks that kind of not necessarily stole his style, but I would like to say he pioneered it, and they just inspired, yeah, you know, other artists.
He was an inspiration, and I think again, he, like Bill Withers, just to bring it back to Bill Withers, Withers did the same thing, but with just his voice and with melodies and singing songs that really spoke to the human condition, like Lean On Me, Ain't No Sunshine,
right?
You know what I mean, like Lovely Day.
Yeah, those are bangers, man. Yeah, oh my god,
bangers. Yeah. Grandma's Hands. You know what I mean, like these are American classical songs.
They're treasures, man, they're
national treasures. And we can go again, I lived in the UK. He is considered, on the level of any great composer, Bill Withers. So losing that brother was really a great loss.
We like to dance, don't we?
Oh man, that was it. And we lost Shabadoo, Adolfo Gutierrez, passed on. Shabadoo from the Breaking films.
Rest in peace.
Cutting, how much of an impact did those Breaking movies have on you? Again, they came out in 1984, 85, you had Breaking 1, 1984. And then you had Breaking 2 in 85, Electric Boogaloo. Did you see those films? Where did you see them? What are your recollections of that? How impactful
did
were
I
they?
See those films? They were extremely impactful. I mean, you talk about urban growth and pre-gentrified
Oakland
urban areas, right? Mm-hmm. We saw this, and of course, seeing it in California. And California is a completely different lifestyle than it is on the East Coast,
right?
So I think it kind of like it made me interest. I always felt like I was more of a East Coast person, kind of growing up.
Interesting.
And it wasn't like I got the influences from these movies, because we always had I already had my own individual style. But again, oftentimes, like I said before, I wasn't seeing these images because we didn't have a television, we didn't have cable TV. A lot of this stuff I watched at your house,
right?
So finally get a chance to see Breaking through older cousins and Electric Boogaloo. Like black people, we like to bang on drums and we like to dance, for crying out loud. Like, so ain't nothing wrong with that. Yeah. That's just the nature of the culture, man. Yeah. So from a Breaking perspective, a hip hop perspective, it just kind of discussed all the elements of graffiti, DJing, of wordplay, of telling a story, and just trying to be progressive in these urban environments. Now, seeing how this all came about, being in Bronx and Queens and just projects and slums and immense poverty, that's right. A whole nother story in itself. Like, how could an American institution or an American city like that allow these areas to just not be developed? You think of these areas now, the way the Queens look, where the Bronx look, everything's sort of like Disneyland, A lot of money has been put back into these places, and there's a controlling factor that allowed these places to not have the resources.
Exactly.
And still the black and the brown people, or the disenfranchised, were able to make it out of that by creating art, by creating fashion, by creating culture. The Harlem Renaissance happened in the early 1900s, man. So it's why in the late 70s does it look like shit? You know what I'm saying? All deliberate.
And the funny thing is, when you look at, again, bring it back to Shabadoo, when you look at Breaking 2, Electric Boogaloo, that was the whole premise of the movie, was gentrification. Remember, they had a community center and they was trying to break it. So he was dancing, the movie didn't get a whole lot of good press when it came out. It was considered cheesy, and because it was Hollywood. But there was a message about gentrification in that film. He was literally dancing to save his community. What I mean? So for us watching it, he was sort of like a hero in a lot of ways. And as Alonzo Carter told us, dancing was a big
Coach
part.
Coach Carter.
Coach Carter.
You mean
Coach
the undefeated? Carter. The undefeated?
The undefeated Coach Carter.
Undefeated Coach Carter.
Yes.
Congratulations, Coach.
Congratulations, Coach, man. We love you. He so eloquently put it when he was on the show that, dancing's a big part of, West Oakland culture. You had to be able to dance and turn it up. So seeing Breaking 2 at the Parkway Theater in 1985 at the 12 o'clock matinee. It was packed. I remember everybody was up grooving, dancing in the aisle, all kind of stuff, you know, because that was the energy of the time. So Shabadoo really represented that. We didn't see black folks on the screen. So Breakin' 2 was huge. We had Breakin' 2, we had Prince and Purple Rain in 1984. And then we had Shabadoo in 85 and Eddie Murphy with, you know, the Beverly Hills Cop series. But there were no black actors. You couldn't like go on. It's not like now where you can flip on and, you know, you could see Chadwick and you could see an array of black actors. We didn't have that,
right?
You know, in 1985. So Dude was definitely a hero in a lot of ways. So we definitely
and if we did see these black images, it was, you know, it was controversial. It was, you know, it was blaxploitation. It was just kind of cheesy. You know what I'm saying? It wasn't something that was youthful. It didn't look necessarily fun. It just looked like it was, you know, kind of oppressed. You know, you might see some images of some kids scattering, jumping gates or something like that, but nothing where it was meaningful. No. It had substance, and it was fun, you know?
Exactly. And again, D.C., where you are, Washington, D.C., is just a city in our history, you know, again, just as brothers and as people, it's just our personal history, and then it's our history as black folks. It's so important. And then just to think about what's happening right now in, you know, January of 2021.
Right.
And you're there, Ding, like you look out your window, you're seeing all the action. And I think it's time that we sort of transition into that talk and really talk about right now, because I think it's a critical point. And I think you have a really unique and important perspective that you need to that we need to document. So tell us a little bit about your connection to the city of Washington, D.C. What are your thoughts on the reaction of this entire presidential election? You know, the Black Lives Matter Plaza. You've actually been there. I mean, you know, I want to hear your thoughts on these things as we transition into this part of the show.
I mean, it's really close to home on a lot of different levels. I've been in D.C., been in Washington, D.C. since 1995. And I moved out here with my best friend, D'Angelo Smith, whom actually he comes on a regular basis. He may be here in a couple of weeks. I saw him in late November. He flew out here, stayed for a week. So we still have that connection there.
Peace to D'Angelo. But, he's one of my best friends, too. Come on, D.
Well, our best friend. Yeah, of course.
He's the brother.
All day, every day.
All day, every day. That's the brother. That's
Brody. So I've always given him shouts out for bringing me to Washington, D.C. So it's just very interesting. I had an interesting conversation about, you know, the Vice President Mike Pence with my family a couple of days ago. And we were just saying how much of a, you know, interesting character he is. And he has an interesting family. He has a very strong-willed wife, and he loves his family and the whole nine. And actually, my barber has been cutting his hair for like the last 5 years. So, and my barber's...
Actually, you have the same barber as the vice president?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
And it's Walls Barbershop. Ironically, Walls Barbershop, Mr. Walls was a Tuskegee Airman, and he's had his barbershop in the city for maybe 50 years. Mm-hmm. And my best friend, one of my other buddies, he purchased it about 20 years ago. So
awesome.
That's just DC stuff, you know? So to be closely connected to a lot of different things and then to have the same barber, that's just interesting. But today, 2021, what that feels like, we have, you know, of course, the presidential election. We have the Black Lives Matter Plaza. We have, you know, the Georgia Senate race that was very, very important. And as of recently, we've had the attack on the Capitol. The thing about all this stuff is that everyone saw it. Everyone, you know, was widely publicized, cameras everywhere, you know. So I think the American people and the world could see it for themselves. But to kind of be here from a bird's eye perspective, it's kind of surreal. It's not as negative as people would like it to see, but, you know, but then again, it's tremendously negative, you know, like walking to Starbucks or going to a Whole Foods to get some coffee or to just do grocery shopping. You see people on a regular basis. Even when President Obama was in office, there's protests every single weekend. So we were used to seeing American people, and American people have a right to assembly, a right to protest, a right to do whatever. You know, I saw the most craziest stuff every weekend when President Obama was in office, every single weekend. But, you know, I don't even want to highlight the attack on the Capitol because it's just shameful for a lot of reasons. But ironically, on that in particular day, you had a very runoff, very important Georgia Senate runoff that was won by John Ossoff by a very, very narrow margin, bro. Like, he won 50.5% over David Perdue, and David Perdue had 49.5%. Then you had the great Reverend Ralph Warnock, who won 50.9% over Kelly Loeffler, and Kelly Loeffler had 49.1%, you know. Then this is, we want to give a shout out to Stacey Abrams also for her work.
Yes.
You know, eight or nine weeks consecutively and boosting these numbers. But more importantly, man, like, I don't even want to, you know, Donald Trump is, his day is his numbered, and I wish him the best, to be perfectly honest. I don't want to speak negative on anyone, especially on this show. But it's just kind of sad, man. So the attack on the actual electoral vote, it's not necessarily about the electoral vote. It's just the attack on the legitimacy of Black voters. You know what I'm saying? So if we kind of look at, call it for what it really is, it's like, man, you're trying to disenfranchise people. You lock up the brothers. You have these trumped up charges. You put sisters in a place of power automatically by default. You know, now they 50 years default with this executive power, so to speak. They got their things together. Like, it's attack on Black women, you know what I mean? And it's attack on, you know, these urban environments for the sake of, because they voted, you know. So you defeat voter suppression, so it's a win, but it's just a sad win because everyone is just, you know, the white American need to get their shit together, man. Like, I mean, what is it? You want to play politics, or do you just hate people? But then again, living and working in Washington, D.C., it's extremely diverse. You know, I have a tremendous amount of people that are, that are politicians or that aren't politicians, you know, but it just gets weird. But then again, you talk about gentrification and how many different changes the city has kind of goes through. And then how just limited these terms are for some of these politicians. So, you know, and then the Washingtonians themselves are going to be here to kind of reap the benefits or not reap the benefits. And I was explaining to my family members through text while it was kind of going on, and folks were saying, hey man, it's an inside job. It's like, it's not an inside job. There's like 20 some odd, maybe even more, maybe 22, maybe 30 different police factions in Washington, D.C., with jurisdictions spread all over the place. So we had to sit here and watch these bandits sit there and attack the Capitol, knowing that the order, the people who has jurisdiction of the USA police is the president at the end of the day, ultimately, right? So he can't, you know, he's going on airs and it was a rally right in front. Meanwhile, this is in the middle of a pandemic, bro. So, you know what I mean? It's the pandemic. The city's on lockdown. The mayor gave us specific orders to, hey, you got to stay home and let these people do what they do. But they didn't think they was going to storm the Capitol like that. And they even think that was cool. It's just disgraceful on so many different levels, man. And, you know, I just feel very, very ashamed. You know, it's not even a good day, you know. But, go ahead.
So what's next, Ding? I mean, again, we're 10 days into a new year. We have 355 days to do something. Right. What needs to be done to address the discrepancies that are going to arise from everything that you just described? What do we need to do? How do we need to prepare ourselves? How do we need to educate ourselves? You know, considering everything that you just described happened in the first 10 days of the new year.
I mean, everything is already out there, bro. Like, the information, I mean, we're in information age, right?
Right.
You are in California right now. I am in Washington, D.C. right now. We are seamlessly having this conversation. in the medium of a podcast, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we're creating our own news based on, you know, opinions, based on facts, based on whatever. Information's already out there, man. People just have to seek it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's just different interpretations what people see. So when there's no singular viewpoint. And then, you know, people change their tone. So it's just a lot of delusion. I guess we have to be less delusional,
mm-hmm.
you know? But what I saw, again, like some of these people that were riding, I'm walking right by them. They're walking right by them. They speaking to me. Hey, how you doing? I'm just like, what's up, man? This is weird.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
As if they're shocked to see an articulate brother walk down the streets with some sweats. Like, you know? But then again, it's the anger, the visceral, the hatred. It just doesn't make any sense, man. You know?
Yes.
Not to mention, like, the attack on the Capitol occurred during the joint sessions of Congress where they were certifying electoral college results. That happened at the exact same time. So you got everybody, you know, the vice president was in there, right?
Mm-hmm.
You got the chief of staff, everyone was in there. So it just put their lives at risk. You know, you got the sergeant at arms of the Capitol just there with his thumb stuck up in his ass. You know what I'm saying? Meanwhile, it was appalling to realize, okay, not only I can see that, but this is actually happening. And I reached out to a friend of mine who was actually in there. She works out of Nancy Pelosi's office. I won't mention any names right now. Perhaps we'll have her on the show one day and she can validate this story. And, you know, I'm just like, are you okay? She was like, yeah, I'm home. Now, mind you, they had to, you know, clear the halls for any possible biological air agent, you know, and they had to come back to revene the whole voting. And the people that actually half the Republicans, not half the Republicans, but it was a large portion of them who still was going to vote against the electoral process. I mean, you know, President-elect won in a landslide. He still want to, you know, spew this rhetoric. It's like, just knock it off already, for one. So if the people are getting inspired by their elected officials or non-elected officials or officials that have been pointed in by, you know, powers that be, it's like, what the fuck? You know?
Dang, I think... Danny,
what's up?
I think you answered it appropriately with your last statement. And that again, when things are just seem so ridiculous, so incredulous, incredible, you got to ask. Right. We as a nation need to look in the mirror and ask ourselves that question if we want to move forward. That's kind of what I'm hearing from you. Like, the next 355 days, every day we need to ask that question.
Correct.
And we need to do something to correct the situation.